I'm Caleb Gardner. Thank you for listening to Preview. It was a great pleasure to speak with decorated Norwegian pianist Leif Ove Andsnes. Andsnes has an extensive history of interpreting some of the world's best-known piano masterpieces. But his latest offering, Dvorak, Poetic Tone Pictures, is a set of pieces so rarely recorded that Mr. Andsnes calls them forgotten. I spoke with the performer about the challenges and excitement of making his new record. Speaking about your new beautiful Dvorak recording, why do you think that these works have maybe been neglected?
Well, it's due to the fact that there's a strange reputation out there about Dvorak's piano music because he was not a pianist, and people think that it's not well written for the piano. I even played these pieces in Prague in the Czech Republic 3-4 weeks ago, and you know, meeting lots of people there, and they said that, you know, this is even here not part of the standard repertoire because we seem to think that he didn't really write well for the piano. I would say that with these pieces, at least, it's a misunderstanding. There are awkward moments, you know, where you feel that it's not written by a Schumann or Chopin or Debussy, where you, everything is just comes so naturally under your hands. But still, if you take away those few awkward moments, it's so colorfully written for the piano. There are different textures for each piece. He really uses the piano in its full range. And the music, of course, is glorious. I mean, this is written in his best time around the Eighth Symphony. I've just written this famous piano quintet in A major, the Requiem. It's a fantastic time. And of course, he was also writing very good piano music. It's a period where he started writing programmatic music with descriptive titles, and it seemed like that sparked some real imagination in him and created something very new.
When last we spoke, you had just finished recording with the Mahler Chamber Orchestra, the Mozart Momentum. Are there any big differences in the way that you prepare when you're going to record a solo venture versus you know that you're going to be recording with a group?
When I know I'm going to record with a group, of course, it's more intense for a few days I have with the group. When it's just me, then I can prepare over a longer time completely, just what I have to do. So normally when I record with an orchestra, it's maybe after a tour with the orchestra, and we have worked extensively, you know, and very intensely playing a few concerts. And then at the end of the tour, there is also recording. So it's intense, and the sessions themselves are limited because you cannot keep 50 people on standby for days and days like I can just do with myself. So I don't have endless time with orchestra. When I play and record solo like this one, I find that I slowly play myself more and more into each piece. I go and listen to myself and think, should be so and so. I should make more contrast and dynamically, and here it needs to flow and needs to be more time at this corner. You know, all these kind of things I analyze and have more time to do that than when I play with an orchestra.
Do you make a habit of listening to historical recordings, especially when they're very limited for this cycle? Is that a part of your preparation, or do you want to just approach the score freshly?
Not so much. A curious thing is that I have known these pieces from a recording which I listened to as a child, and I got very attracted, especially by the first pieces. And I played the very first one in the youth competition when I was 12. So I do at least know that recording. But in this case, there are not so many recordings around. So I could feel very free to create my own version of this, which can be a burden if you play a piece where there's like 100 different recordings and there is an interpretation path taken. It has a history of interpretation, which is the case with the famous Beethoven sonatas or Chopin pieces or whatever. In this case, there's not so much of that. So there is more of a freedom maybe, and it can more easily become personal, which it feels like it has become for me.
Approaching a piece that's been recorded hundreds of times versus very few, what's your relationship to those history? And I guess your answer was that there's less pressure when there's very few recordings, even when they're very high quality. Do you think that's true?
Yes, in a certain sense. But I'm always careful to listen to recordings in any case when I'm studying a piece. When I have done concerts and sort of formed my opinion and formed my Mozart or my Beethoven or so, then I might listen again to some legendary recordings of the past or maybe contemporary recordings or whatever, just to get some ideas and pick up, oh yeah, that's great. Maybe I should do a little bit more of that or this and that. But in general, I have to say that I try to avoid a little bit listening to too many versions of the same piece. When you get ideas from others, it already, if when you choose what ideas, that makes it personal. So it doesn't mean that I'm trying to copy Horowitz or Glengould or whoever it would be. I'm choosing, oh, that thing that I really liked about Horowitz recording, I might use that. Of course, it will never sound like Horowitz, but just to get impulses, to a certain degree, that can be good. More than anything, I'm trying to read the score with my passion and my intellect and my understanding. And, you know, what does this mean to me? What is my Rachmaninoff?
That comes through in listening to these three recordings. And the last question very quickly. You spoke about it last time and this time. Honing your craft and how you approach the pieces in front of live audiences. You routinely perform in both Europe and America. Do you feel a different attitude or approach from the audiences in those two places?
Within Europe and within America, they will also be different. So I cannot say it's not that simple. I mean, it depends on the place. It depends on the room, you know. It depends on how it sounds in that specific room, how the feeling is between audience and whole. And some places it's more quiet, more concentrated. Other places are bigger, more spacious, maybe more restless in the audience. Difficult to give a general answer to that. That's what makes this so interesting, that it will never be the same. I'm also changing instrument each evening. It makes it even more complicated. I would sometimes really wish that I could play on the instrument which I played on 2 days ago, which I loved, you know, and I could bring that to the next concert. But that's just a bit too complicated for a pianist. So I tend to play on different instruments. But it's also exciting. You have to use what you get. Some instruments are mellow and mild. Some are fiery. Some have a gigantic bass. Others have a bell-like treble. How does that communicate with my understanding of these pieces, and how can I use this instrument? That's part of the challenge, I guess.
Leif Ove Andsnes, a pleasure speaking with you. Our audience is grateful that you could spend this time. I personally hope that I can come see you perform in a couple weeks in Leipzig.
Thanks. Come and say hello if you're there.
I'm Caleb Gardner. Thank you so much for listening to Preview. Programs like this are made possible only by your generous support. Please come visit us at theclassicalstation.org.